Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The following podcast contains explicit language.
I tell you what, he's a lot more obsessed with me than I am with him.
If Donald is the nominee, Hillary wins and she wins by double digits.
If you're a Hillary supporter, you're rooting for Donald.
Obfuscate the real problems facing our society and find somebody you can blame. That's what demagoguery is about.
Hello and welcome to TrumpCast, the show about John Miller, the guy who wants you to know that the luscious ladies are all after Donald Trump. I'm Jacob Weisberg. I'm not sure if you read that long New York Times article over the weekend about Trump crossing the line with women. I thought it missed its target. The reason was that it was trying to nail Trump as a sexual harasser who makes unwelcome sexual advances and uses his position as an employer to take advantage of women. They talked to 40 women, and none of them had any stories that were especially horrifying. He asked one woman to put on a bathing suit and go for a swim. They ended up dating. Another woman claims he groped her under a restaurant table with her boyfriend present. Now, those are clearly sleazy abuses of power. But I think the real case that emerges when you read about Donald Trump is different, and if anything, a little more perverse. I don't think he's that interested in sleeping with a lot of different women. For one thing, he's a germaphobe who hates even shaking hands with people. Sex involves a lot of germs. And obviously, the main romantic relationship Donald Trump has always had is with Donald Trump. No, Donald Trump's weird kink is that he wants other men to think he has his choice of the most beautiful women in the world. It's ego, not sex. That's why he bought the Miss Universe pageant. That's why he went on the Howard Stern show to brag about his conquests. And that's why he had the elusive John Miller, the temp spokesman who sounds curiously like the Donald, calling up gossip columnists to brag about the most desirable women in the world, begging Trump to go out with them. A former People magazine reporter found a 14-minute tape from 1992, and it's amazing. "They just call," Mr. Miller says, of his boss's love life, "actresses, people that you write about, just call to see if they can go out with him and things." Madonna called and wanted to go out with Donald Trump. "But he's got zero interest in Madonna," Mr. Miller says. "Carla Bruni dropped Mick Jagger for Donald. But again, he's not making any commitments to Carla either, just so you understand." There's a term for a guy like this. Asshole. But not just any asshole. And my guest today, the distinguished philosopher Aaron James, is here to talk to us about his new book in which he analyzes exactly what kind of asshole Donald Trump is.
By now, you've heard the recordings of John Miller, a voice that sounds an awful lot like Trump, doing some PR for Mr. Trump in the early 90s. Our friends at Second City got their hands on some other calls made to similar gossip columns in this era, and these were even harder to believe. Hello?
Hello. Is this the gossip desk?
Yes, it is, yeah.
This is Carla Bruni.
Excuse me?
I'm Carla Bruni. I wanted to call and clear up some items about me and Donald Trump.
Oh, the millionaire.
He's a billionaire, actually.
Wait, who am I speaking to right now?
This is Carla Bruni, the singer, the French singer. I'm fantastic. Very attractive and very attracted to Mr. Trump. Go ahead and print that.
You don't sound French. You're a French woman?
That's right.
But can you say something in French?
Of course I can. I speak great French. Everyone tells me my French is the best. Look, the point is here that I've been flirting with Donald Trump. He's very successful. He's very handsome. And I'd like very much to kiss him in the manner of my people. We use our tongues. It's great, I have to tell you.
Hello?
Yes, is this the gossip desk?
It is. Is this Mr. Trump?
What? No, definitely not. No, this is Madonna.
I'm sorry, this is Madonna?
That's right. I wanted to call you and tell you a story about meeting Donald Trump.
Oh, the billionaire.
He's a multi-billionaire, actually. He's very, very successful.
This doesn't sound like Madonna.
That's what people said when I put out Justify My Love, but you have to go in new directions. Listen, the point is, I want to tell you about how all of my dancers and I were blown away by Mr. Trump at an event recently. I call him all the time asking for dates. Did you know that?
No.
Well, I do, but he's very busy, very successful. I would love to date him, but he's too busy. You can print that.
Hello?
Yes. Is this the gossip desk?
Mr. Trump, look, I don't know if we can...
No, it's not me. It's Michael Jordan.
Mr. Trump, you're not even disguising your voice. You're not even trying.
I don't even know what you're talking about. Just wanted to make sure you print that I played one-on-one basketball with Trump last night. He schooled me. He really, really schooled me. The guy's amazing. He's very successful, and he walked off the court, and there were two ladies waiting for him. Pretty sure it was Madonna and Carla Bruni. They were kissing him like French people. It was amazing. He's amazing. I just have to tell you.
I want to kiss you in Paris.
That was a sketch from Second City. It was written by Steve Waltine and performed by Steve Waltine and John DiDomenico. My guest today is Aaron James. He's a professor of philosophy at the University of California, Irvine, and author of the new book, Assholes, A Theory of Donald Trump. Aaron, thanks for joining me on TrumpCast.
Thanks so much. Nice to be with you.
So this follows from the earlier book you did, Assholes, A Theory. At risk of the obvious, can you tell us what your theory of assholes is and why, and I guess this is the obvious part, why Donald Trump is one?
Sure thing. As I define him, the asshole is the guy who takes special advantages in cooperative life out of an entrenched sense of entitlement, which immunizes him against the complaints of other people. And so in the earlier book, you know, I cite lots of different examples, and I do mention, I mentioned Donald Trump as an example. Now that he's sort of risen on the world stage, you know, it's sort of even more urgent to think about, well, what kind of asshole he is or why he qualifies. And I think what's special about him is that he's not of an older-fashioned style asshole who has a sort of thick or grandiose sense of entitlement, but of thin type. So it's enough for his sense of entitlement to do sort of its job and make him an asshole that, you know, he thinks he's a winner or that he's great. And you want to ask, well, why? Why are you a winner, or why would that make you entitled to special advantages? And the answer can just be, you know, there can be no answer for him, or it can be a shifting answer, constantly changing. That sort of rationalization is very powerful for him, and enough to make him think that, you know, he can insult people, be a bully, cheat around the edges of rules, and do lots of things that would otherwise be agreed to be unacceptable.
So you could be offering a definition of the term narcissist as well. What's the difference between a narcissist, which surely Trump is, and an asshole? The one is more a psychological concept. Yours is more of a philosophical concept.
That's true. The narcissism isn't any longer a well-defined psychological concept. It was taken out of the Diagnostic Statistical Manual, actually. But you can, I think you can still have kinds of narcissists that have very low sense of self-worth and are completely self-absorbed and can be difficult to deal with, but they may or may not be assholes. That's one way it's different. But the more out in the open, brazen narcissist with a high sense of self-worth, well, that person might not be an asshole either, because they might sort of work within, you know, moral expectations and not misbehave, but maybe even succeed, you know, in science or maybe politics, partly because of their narcissism. But in this case, it's pretty clear that his narcissism is related to his being an asshole. I think it comes from an inferiority complex, his need to be a winner and be seen as a winner, need to be seen as superior to others in their eyes and in his own eyes, comes from, you know, having to prove himself, and maybe because of his father, you know. But now, you know, he's sort of become completely convinced of, you know, that he's a winner and superior, even as he's still striving to constantly prove it in a way you might think he wouldn't have to if he was completely convinced.
So you draw an analytical distinction between the asshole and the ass clown. I'm working on keeping a straight face here, but explain the difference, if you would.
The ass is the person who's, you know, oblivious to important things, or especially, you know, the way other people sees them. And the clown is, you know, somebody who, you know, puts on an entertaining pretense for the entertainment of other people, for an audience. And so the ass clown is sort of the mix of the two concepts. It's the guy who is telling the joke, but who's not in on it, as you might put it, to summarize. That is somebody who's trying to put on a show, trying to be entertaining, trying to win their approval, get them to like him, give them a good time, but then doesn't see how he's presenting himself fully to them. He doesn't see things that are sort of obvious to everyone about him. And I think that's a really important part of Donald Trump's persona. It's why he succeeds so well as an asshole, because it's partly what makes him likable.
Because people can laugh at him.
You're laughing at him, you know, because he's sort of conspicuously an ass, and, you know, we can all relate to that. That's a human moment. It has a comedic quality, kind of like slapstick comedy. I think that's a really big part of his appeal, part of his charisma, and what's really necessary for him to be able to say all the other sort of upsetting things that he does.
So what's it going to be? Is he an asshole or an ass clown or both?
He's definitely both. It's his kind of asshole to be an ass clown. And what I'm thinking about, I don't think you should sort of nail down his type of asshole or even type of person as sort of one type, because one reason he's successful is that he shifts between types very, very quickly. And that's one thing, one reason why he's so successful. He destabilizes our reactions to him by sort of shifting one moment a bully, one minute the jokester, one minute an entertainer, and then, you know, a braggart. And, you know, some mid-sentence sometimes he'll shift. Or you'll notice he'll say something really offensive. He'll tack quickly to the joke or the bullshitter. He's a massive bullshitter, and that's surprising in its own way.
We're not even going to start on bullshitter. But,
But so he's shifting in this way. It's destabilizing so that you kind of can't take your eyes off him, but you also aren't sort of just resolutely offended.
But he is really bad at being laughed at. That is, he can't stand being laughed at. I was sitting about 10 feet from him at that famous White House Correspondents' Dinner when Obama made fun of him. And you just saw him sort of turning purple with rage and ultimately kind of stormed out, you know. And I think some people think that that's sort of why he's running for president, because of that kind of humiliation. Doesn't what you're describing, to be successful as an asshole or an ass clown, you need the quality of being able to be laughed at, being in on the joke of yourself?
Well, I think that's a good point. I think that's definitely true of the comedian. The ass clown is different in this way. It goes to the ass part. That's the part that, you know, he's oblivious to, that he sort of can't take up. And that's partly what makes him fascinating and seem almost innocent and sincere, you know. Like a truth teller, you really think he really believes this, because it kind of comes from a certain kind of obliviousness about others.
When Trump did that New York Times interview a month or two ago, he said, you know, whenever I'm at one of these rallies and the crowd starts to get a little too quiet, I just bring up the wall and it brings him right back. So, you know, which sort of raised for me the question of, is Trump sincere in believing whatever bullshit he's spouting at the moment, or is he manipulative and throwing out stuff he doesn't really believe for calculated political effect? And the question to you, which is the bigger asshole, the person who believes their own bullshit or the person who is manipulating an audience with stuff they know is bullshit?
Right, yeah. So I think in the first instance, he's a showman. Bullshitting is a show, a performance, you know, of being able to say things that are disruptive or pleasing. And that can be, that's manipulative in one way. I mean, you're doing it based on expectations about how other people are going to respond. And he's very good at knowing what will, you know, get a rise out of people, what will get excited, right? That doesn't mean he's that cunning as a sort of schemer, manipulative in a broader sense. I mean, I think he just sort of found himself doing that because he's a showman, and saw that it worked, and then so just sort of kept going with what has worked. And you don't have to believe what you're saying when you're a bullshitter. You know, you're speaking without regard to what's true. But it's a potentially very interesting performatively to also seem very convinced of what you're saying in the moment, sort of eat your own bullshit, as it were, for performative purposes, right?
Aaron, I finally have an academic philosopher on the program, and we're going to need the language warning. So.
But that's a dramatic performance, you know. He's all in there, and it also brings him down to earth, you know, because you think, oh, look at that guy, you know, he's one of us, you know, not too good for us, you know, he'll do this.
Right. I mean, the demagogue, which is yet another category and a less profane one, is a politician who doesn't believe some of what he's saying and thinks the people listening to him are stupid and he can sort of whip them up by using this kind of material.
Yeah, I think that's another way he's slightly different from that version of the demagogue, because he doesn't think his audience is stupid necessarily, because he can know, insofar as he's a bullshitter, that they understand that he's bullshitting. They understand the nature of the performance. That's part of the bull session performance, is you go up and say a bunch of stuff for performative reasons, you know, like an actor on a stage, that are sort of good political speech that have a social function of sort of asserting authority or common sense or plain reason or something like that, you know, or in this case, you know, speaking up for the good old days and, well, in effect, what might be described as, you know, white cultural dissatisfaction, white male cultural dissatisfaction. And that's the point of the performance. And his audience knows that. They know he doesn't necessarily believe any specific thing he's saying. And, you know, so they're fine when he says something different later, they don't think he's changing his mind. It's just like, well, you know, he never believed that stuff in the first place necessarily. You know, he definitely has demagogic characteristics, but maybe slightly different in this way.
So here's another positive thing you say about Trump, or at least about the effect of Trump. You write that Trump, surely without intending it, has been a force for good to some extent. He's a wake-up call to the Republic. Only the GOP establishment, which he has upended, regrets his having forced us to reckon with much that was previously hidden. He brought implicit racism out into the open for sunlight and criticism, which thereby ends the dog-whistle racist politics invented by Richard Nixon, a former asshole president. Despite our real insecurities, Trump's depiction of Mexicans and Muslims is vile and rightly condemned. Yet the condemnation also upholds their status as moral equals. That's a very interesting idea that you sort of – the truth comes out thanks to Trump, that we don't have suppressed racism and that in a curious way, open racism is better than suppressed and coded racism because you can recognize it for what it is and respond to it.
Yeah, we can start discussing about it without sort of being in denial about it or being a simply partisan accusation. You know, we can have an open discussion about it, and then people can come out and condemn it, which then upholds the rights of people whose rights need to be affirmed. And, I mean, that's not a great situation. It's still better to have no racism, obviously. But, you know, in a country like ours, that's, you know, it's our original sin, and it's a long process of sort of working through those attitudes. And, you know, Nixon's Southern strategy and the dog whistle politics, as they're often called, you know, have been with us for a long time and had a major influence on politics. And it's a remarkable thing, I think, that someone like Trump could just come along and in some sense put an end to it, just not necessarily without intention. He's sort of completely, it's an inadvertent contribution. You know, assholes can be a force for good, but not because they're intending to, right? It's completely accidental that he happens to do this by realizing that being more overt about this stuff, you know, really gets a rise out of people, and you can get a lot of attention, and just by saying that stuff, you know, out loud. So he thinks that's a stroke of genius, right, on his part, by saying the thing that everybody else has kept quiet. But now everyone else can think, well, okay, he was doing that for sort of strategic reasons or because it seemed to work. But in the end, you think, oh, well, now this is really a change in our political culture. It's improvement in certain respects. Now, I mean, other people could find other reasons for thinking he's a force for good. I was sort of offering that as one that I thought was, you know, one reason why there was an improvement.
Aaron, I was just going to say thank God for podcasting, because you're going to have a hard time talking about this book on NPR.
Oh, yeah, I know. That's always a problem with this enterprise, but yeah.
My guest today has been Aaron James. He's the author of Assholes, A Theory of Donald Trump. It's a fantastic book. You ought to read it. It's very short. It won't take you long. Aaron, thanks for joining me.
Thanks so much. It's great to be with you.
That's it for today's episode of TrumpCast. The show is produced by Henry Milofsky and Jason DeLeon. Slate's executive producer is Steve Lickteig. Andy Bowers is our chief content officer. John D. Domenico is our voice of Donald Trump. I'm Jacob Weisberg. Thanks for listening to TrumpCast.
Bernie Sanders is being treated very badly by the Dems. The system is rigged against him. He should run as an independent. Run, Bernie, run.